warriors ruled the seven seas. Conquered continents as they pleased. War makes wealth for the West, no health or welfare for the rest. Plunder and labor and land enriched the North and Western man. Now his wealth destroys the weather. In the South there's flood and drought. Africa pays again, no doubt. Arctic ice is melting, it's a crisis. But they're pelting us with lame excuses. It's no use. This abuse of our home, them that made the mess, got to make redress, they must. It's called justice. Big bucks for bailouts, bonuses and bombs, but not to save the earth. We're warned by ones and twos and threes, we're dying by degrees. What about the bankers and the bailers and the climate crisis failures? Give them all FEMA trailers. People need food, clothing and glaciers, but these human rights erasures, made by criminals of climate, cheat the earth and the poor, made poor by profit, time to come off it. How long will we let our mother die, while leaders stand by and lie, stand by and lie, stand by and lie. Poison the lakes and rivers, causing cancer, that's the answer we give to the indigenous. No wonder they're not digging us. One more insult, one more injury, one more death sentence. That's when we begin to see angry mermaids, angry polar bears, angry killer whales, angry islanders, angry islands, angry islanders, angry islands, angry continents. Keep the oil in the soil, keep the coal in the hole, and the tar in the sand. Are you listening, Alberta? Are you listening in Ottawa?
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. We're listening to Tom Ashbrook talk to Christopher Rowland and David K. Johnson. They're talking about how big corporations lobby for the big tax breaks. As Congress tightens the national budget belt, big corporations are getting monster tax breaks with the help of high-paid lobbyists.
Well, they argue that they can't compete on the global stage. So that's the big argument these days that I hear around the Hill, is that if we don't get these tax breaks, we're going to fall behind China. We're going to fall behind India. We really need to have our government in our corner. So that's kind of the argument. And it carries a lot of sway with, American members of Congress who are, terrified of losing jobs in their states and in their districts. The thing is that what's ironic is that so many of these congressmen also are, they are in favor of free markets. They think that competition is healthy, and that that competition leads to innovation, and that government should get out of the way. And one of the mantras of the Romney campaign was, Obama's administration is picking winners and losers. But when you look at this tax code, basically that's what they're all doing. They're picking winners and losers, and as David said, they're protecting monopolies, and they are bolstering favored few and the ones who can spend and dig deep and pay for tax lobbying.
David K. Johnston, on the other hand, you raise the idea of jobs going overseas, and that pulls people up short. I mean, is that fair? Maybe these businesses are subsidized elsewhere, and so our government needs to be in the game too? Or is it that we're just not competing?
What's happening there is very simple. Capital moves very easily across borders. Push a button, you can move an unlimited amount of money from one country to another. Labor doesn't and cannot. And so what you have is a labor arbitrage. You're replacing workers in America with lower paid workers in Mexico, China, Hanoi, other places where they can get them to work incredibly cheaply. And Whirlpool is a good example of this. Here they got this subsidy, then they got rid of 800 jobs in Arkansas, and they moved those jobs to Mexico. By the way, sometimes the U.S. benefits from this. In Memphis, the big Swedish company Electrolux, they make appliances, got a deal where they fired a bunch of workers in Montreal and moved to non-union Memphis with a huge subsidy to build a new factory. So sometimes those jobs come here. but not very often.
So, I mean, but where does this leave us? I mean, we've also got tax breaks that let companies take jobs abroad and leave their profits there and never pay taxes on them. But, you know, I mean, you might, somebody might talk, hear you talk about labor arbitrage and say, maybe we do need to give these tax breaks to our companies. We might not want to, but otherwise we're out of work.
Well, I think we have to have a fundamental discussion, Tom, about our economic myths and our economic realities. The fact is capital is going to go where it'll get the greatest return, and the rules are set by governments. And those rules right now say to companies quite reasonably, mind the tax code, mind the regulatory system, block your competitors, and move every labor job you can offshore. And we're beginning to see that now with white-collar jobs. We're seeing tax returns done not by accountants in America, but in India. We're seeing journalism. Some journalist jobs are being moved to India. So this will be a continuing problem until we have a debate about how globalization is affecting overall our historic notions about business.
And get honest about what sort of business structure we're really in, who's supporting what. Let's go to New York. Sakaponik, New York, and Sal. Sal, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
I'm just listening in, and it's fascinating that all these corporations spending the money to lobby to reduce their taxes for the things that they need to pay for that enabled their corporations to flourish here in America, funding through tax dollars for the SEC, for the justice system, the patent department, and the roads, the Department of Transportation that guarantees the safe passage of goods from state to state,
yeah.
And all these rules and regulations, and essentially leaving you and I holding the bag and picking up the tab.
And then complaining when the infrastructure's not in good shape. Come on, guys, chip in here. Sal, it's a very good point, and I appreciate your calling in with it. I want to get one more here. Our time grows short. Asheville, North Carolina. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think we're treating the symptom, not the disease, unfortunately.
What do you mean?
The problem is campaign finance. It's the way we finance our campaigns, and what we're asking in asking politicians not to give favors to corporations who are giving them money is we're asking them to vote or to turn away the lifeblood of their being in power. As long as corporate money is behind the election or money, private money or private interest money is behind the election of public officials, this is going to continue, and you're not going to stop it, no matter how much we may wring our hands.
Let us pick it up right there, Richard. Chris, what are you thinking as you hear Richard's concern, complaint?
Well, it's definitely a very valid point. I mean, take Whirlpool as an example. They have a corporate PAC. It's not a super PAC. It's just a regular old PAC where their employees all contribute into that thing. And then Whirlpool takes that money and they dole it out to key members of the House Ways and Means Committee, who happen to be actually the chairman and the ranking member are both from Michigan. And then they dole it out to other very key people on all the important committees that have control over taxes. So it's definitely a rampant issue in Washington. It's only getting worse right now because of the corporate influence with now unlimited contributions permitted and with super PACs. It'll be very interesting to see, I think, in the next cycle. So after the presidential election and in this next 2-year cycle, as corporate tax reform is taken up, how much unrestricted corporate money does flow into campaign finance as lawmakers deliberate on whether or not to roll back some of these tax breaks.
But one can only imagine the Mississippi-sized scale of that could be. David K. Johnston, here's a listener on Twitter. Brent says, give us names. Which members of the House, Senate get the most and from whom? Is there a hierarchy of recipients that matters here, David?
Well, yes, and it depends on what committees you're on. I mean, best to be on Ways and Means and Finance, for example. There's not a lot of money in fisheries. But the problem of campaign finance is right at the core of this, and there are ways we could solve this. We could restrict contributions to people who live in your district or state, if you're a senator, for example. The founders who did not like corporations, there were only 6 corporations in America at the beginning of our constitutional government. and they were basically what today we would call public utilities or charitable organizations, they would be astounded at what the Supreme Court has done in Citizens United, as would, by the way, former Chief Justice Rehnquist, who didn't like this idea at all, that corporations should have political as opposed to property rights.
Chris, if you could pull the plug on all this tomorrow, what would it mean for American business, industry? Would it crumble? Is it all floating on this? Is it that big a deal? Or they'd figure it out, go on, and we'd have a better, our books better balanced?
Well, for Whirlpool, it would be a big deal. The money that they get from tax credits is a big part of their balance sheet. They carry it forward, and they have close to $1 billion of tax deferred tax credits carried forward on their balance sheet.
Wow.
People who buy their stock look at that and think that this is a good thing.
It's part of their value.
yeah, absolutely. So it would definitely affect the bottom lines of some certain industries. Absolutely. On the other hand, you look at GE and extremely profitable corporations like the oil companies, and it's really hard to imagine that they would suffer excessively if they lost this gravy that they get from Congress.
This is all very important insight as we wade into this era of tight budgets and big debates about what to do over them. Chris Rowland writes very compellingly for the Boston Globe about this. You can see his latest big piece at our website, onpointradio.org. Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe, Chris Rowland, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And David K. Johnston, author of The Fine Print and Free Lunch and Perfectly Legal at taxanalyst.com. You can find his columns now. David, it's always great to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Delighted to be here.
In a moment, the storm over taxation in Cyprus and maybe the stability of the EU with Russian oligarchs right in the middle of it all. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. For the first time in the long financial crisis of the European Union, bank depositors are being asked to fork over, give up 6 to 10% of their holdings in Little Cyprus. Rich Russian depositors are up in arms. So are world financial markets as Cyprus wavers. Peter Spiegel joins us right now, Brussels Bureau Chief of the Financial Times, to look at the backstory here. Peter Spiegel, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here, Tom.
Why did Cyprus roll out this plan to ding people's bank accounts for 6 to 10%, depending on the size? Why?
Well, let's be very clear. It was not Cyprus's idea to do this, and the Cypriot government now is in complete turmoil now because it actually was forced into this. This was very much a plan orchestrated by Germany, as is everything in the Eurozone.
Okay.
They decided that this bailout that Cyprus needed, which the big price tag was going to be 17 billion euros, which by the standards of a Greek bailout or even an Irish bailout was pretty small, but for an island whose entire economy is 18 billion euros, it's a pretty big price tag. The Germans said, we are not willing to pay for that. We want to bring that price tag down. We want to bring it down to 10 billion. And so we're going to have to come up with a way to find extra money to pay for that. And their idea was, we basically seize money in Cypriot bank accounts and use that to as part of the bailout, because the biggest portion of that bailout was Cyprus's banks, which have basically been teetering now for almost 2 years. So it wasn't Cyprus's idea. They were frankly taken aback by it. The new president was just elected a couple weeks ago, showed up here in Brussels thinking it would have been something completely different, and they literally went into a meeting with the German finance minister, the head of the IMF, and very other senior finance officials here in Brussels, and were told, you will take this or basically your entire island is going to go under financially.
Why does Cyprus need a bailout?
The main reason is the banking sector. This is an island that, not unlike Ireland, not unlike Iceland before it, basically its banking sector became way too big for its economy. It had become basically an offshore tax haven for particularly a lot of Russian money. The taxes in Cyprus, particularly the corporate tax, is very low, 10%. So if you're a Russian oligarch and you had a lot of money and you weren't particularly trusting the Russian system, where you have not a whole lot of transparency in the judiciary and they're also in the financial system, let's move to a Russia-friendly country, because Cyprus is. It has long ties with the Russians, dating back to the 1974 war with Turkey, where NATO backed Turkey and the Russians backed the Greek side of the island. So you move your money to Cyprus. It's an EU country. It's got low taxes. It's got an EU-approved banking system and regulation. And basically, all these deposits, these Russian deposits, had made Cyprus a banking center. It is the largest part of the economy. And when Europe started to teeter And, you know, a lot of the investments that, that Cypriot banks had were in Greece. And when those investments started to go under, that whole system began to topple.
Well, we've all seen the whole world holding its breath, though, you know, in hopes that they get it together. But let me ask you this. The EU, Germany, as you have it, didn't ask Portuguese people or Greek people or Irish people, you know, bank depositors to fork over a chunk of their bank account when they were in trouble. Are they doing it with Cyprus because Russian money is so big in those banks? And they're saying, what the heck? Let Russia bail them out.
It's certainly one of the reasons. Absolutely. I mean, you've heard this said repeatedly, particularly in Germany, that why are we going to bail out a bunch of Russian oligarchs? And that has been overtly said in the German Bundestag. But let's also be clear, this is a change in attitude that we've seen over the course of the three-year crisis. When I first showed up here in Brussels, mm-hmm. right after the first Greek bailout in 2010, you could not mention the word default. Literally, even off the record, you'd go up to very senior officials and say, come on, you know Greece is going to default. And they would say, don't mention that word. Go away from me. I can't mention this. Over the course of the last 3 years, we've seen a much more willingness by the EU leaders to say, you know what? I don't want to pay for this anymore. We're going to get private investors to pay for it. In Greece, it was private bondholders. Now in Cyprus, it's private bank holders. And basically, we've had a political backlash in countries like Germany, but also the Netherlands, Finland, some of these other northern Eurozone countries that don't like to pay for these bailouts. And it's just not politically palatable to put out more bailout money. So you got to find the money somewhere else, and now it's private investors. And that is the real risk here. The real risk is private investors, including American investors, mm-hmm. just we're no longer going to be spooked out of Europe. They're going to pull their money out of Italy. They're going to pull their money out of Spain. Those are the two economies that really are too big to fail, and that's the real risk where this tiny little island in the Eastern Mediterranean could really spark a new panic in a much larger country.
It's been a big party on Wall Street lately, Peter. If this thing goes wrong, could it kick back even to New York?
It certainly could, because this is like Lehman Brothers. Once you start getting the financial sector, people panicking and freezing, the financial sector of the world is interconnected now. So something, a small spark in a place like Cyprus can bring down Eurozone peripheral banks, and those all have connections to U.S. banks. It is really what was worrying about Greece a year ago. A small country on the periphery of Europe can bring down the entire global financial system, and that's the real system, the real problem. We're not there yet. We're certainly, you know, not even close as we were in Greece a year ago.
But watch out.
We're starting to see those panics again. It's really, as you said, let's watch out.
Peter Spiegel with the Financial Times. You're great. Thanks for joining us.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
While digesting Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore, a plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I went to the bank this morning, and the cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit. I took him up on what he said, and I stuck them stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I got my window shields filled with flags I couldn't see, so I ran the car upside a curve to a tree. By the time they got a doctor down, I was already dead. And I'll never understand why the man standing in the pearly gates said, but your flag decal won't get you heaven anymore. We're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Good evening and welcome to this meeting of the Tea Party. Now, this year's goal is very important. We have to defeat President Obama. Now, we conservatives have been working for the last year to find an inspirational and exciting leader to do just that. And since we couldn't find one, we nominated Mitt Romney. So now, we're going to have to do what we've got to do. Well, since we've had Barack, we've been outraged, and now we've got Mitts. We want the Senate back, so we tried to get Todd Akin to quit.
Oh, Romney, it took some time, but we're starting to get in line.
You gotta help me, Romney, help us show Obama the door.
Bow, 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 bow. Help me, Romney, help me, Romney.
Tell him start packing. Ooh.
Eric Holder, give the cold shoulder.
Tell Panetta we're gonna get ya.
Adios, please, to Miss Pelosi.
Send Tim Geithner over to frighten her.
Help us, Romney, yeah.
We can't take any more.
I'll tell you what, if this Obamacare goes into effect, I might just leave the country.
Yeah, enough of this socialized health care. I'm moving to Canada.
Hey, all I know is that if everyone has to have health insurance, yeah, my business is going to suffer.
He's a mortician.
Bow, 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 bow. Help us, Romney, help me to commie.
As a mean trick, let's all get real sick.
Hey, guess what they're accusing Paul Ryan of now? They're accusing him of supporting death panels.
What? He would never do that to anyone.
Oh, no, 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 not death panels for people.
Send death panels where?
To kill Obamacare.
Ye come here, gather round the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage. From underneath the vestiture of law, the lobbyists at Washington do gnaw at liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you, till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Our nation was built upon the right of every person to improve their plight. The laws of this republic they rewrite, and now a few own everything in sight. They own it free of liability. They own that they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped, we are not free. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you, till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Enforce your monopolies with guns while sacrificing our daughters and sons. But certain things belong to everyone. Your thievery has left the people none. So take heed of our notice to redress. We had little to lose, we must confess. Your empty words do leave us unimpressed. A growing number join us in protest. We occupy the streets, we occupy the courts, we occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You can't divide us into sides, and from our gaze you cannot hide. Denial serves to amplify, and our allegiance you can't buy. Our government is not for sale. The banks do not deserve a bail. We will not reward those who fail. We'll not move till we prevail. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We are the many, you are the few.
Now for something completely different.